and welcome to Fiberhooligan. I'm your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour or so, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 56th episode of Fiberhooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos. If you are tuning in for the first time, Fiberhooligan is a podcast hosted by yours truly and dedicated to bringing you interviews with the best of the fiber arts world, including experts and designers in the crafts of knitting, crochet, spinning, weaving, as well as anything else that I think is interesting. I want to make sure I thank the good folks over at Prime Publishing. Prime Publishing is the exclusive media sponsor for Fiberhooligan, and this show is brought to you by AllFreeCrochet.com, your source for great crochet patterns. If you haven't checked them out yet, please head on over to AllFreeCrochet.com to get in on the fun. While we're on the subject, I want to welcome the new listeners from AllFreeKnitting.com and AllFreeCrochet.com. I am thrilled to be here with you today. Thank you for tuning in and trying out the show. I hope you enjoy it, and I can't wait for us to get to know each other better. And of course, I'd like to welcome back our regular Fiberhooligan listeners. Thank you for making the move with us to our new home and new format. Your ongoing support means so very much to me. We do have another sponsor for today's show. Our show today is also brought to you by Leisure Arts. LeisureArts.com is your online source for top-notch patterns and books. If you like crochet, knitting, quilting, fun kids' crafts, and more, visit their online web store today, LeisureArts.com. That's LeisureArts.com. Okay, my guest today is a very talented crochet designer, teacher, and author. She has been bringing cuteness into the crochet world with her adorable stuffed animal designs since 2008. Her website, freshstitches.com, is a premier destination for crochet patterns, tutorials, and kits. She is the author of Cuddly Crochet, Crocheted Softies, and Modern Baby Crochet. She firmly believes that there is no one right way to crochet and enthusiastically experiments with a variety of techniques, even less popular ones, to achieve the desired finished product. Her philosophy spills over into her teaching style. She encourages students to discover what works best for their own crocheting style for maximum crochet enjoyment. A passionate crafter and advocate for self-sufficient living, she and her husband live in Minnesota, where she also knits, bakes bread, makes jam, and tends to her garden. She personifies cute, and that cuteness is infectious. I'm speaking of my friend, the effervescent Stacy Trock. Stacy joins us today from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Good morning, Stacy, and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I got that right, didn't I? It was Minneapolis, Minnesota?
It is. I know, but if you had gotten that wrong and I did live in St. Paul, I think people would like have your head for that. There's a very big rivalry between the two Twin Cities.
That's what I've heard. I don't remember seeing it myself, but again, I only visit.
It's serious. Well, it comes down to these very small things because Minnesotans are subtle. Like we have in Minneapolis here, we have streets where you plow on the even side or the odd side, but their signs in St. Paul say night plow and day plow. It's, you know, you can't plow the roads the same way. It's all very contentious.
Okay. Well, I'm not gonna delve too deeply into the psychology.
You know that takes over half of the year, right? The plowing cycle.
It's the same here, but we don't have street rivalries or anything like that. Okay. But anyway, I'm not gonna try to diagnose this one. I think that might be beyond me at this point. So, but is it beautiful there today? I mean, it's no longer cold. We're not talking about that. It's got to be beautiful in Minneapolis today.
It's beautiful and sunny. It's about 55. We're aspiring to hit 70 today. So summer hasn't quite hit, but it's always sunny in Minneapolis. Even when it's snowing, it's sunny.
And for Fiberhooligan listeners that are curious, Stacy lives about, I would say, what, 3.5-4 hours away from me?
That's true.
Although, you know, I've never driven up there to see her or anything because she's never invited me. But that's a whole other conversation.
You haven't invited me.
As you can see, folks, this is going to be an interview where I am outmatched for wits all the way through. So bear with us both. Well, I'm glad it's beautiful there. It's beautiful here. I'm really liking it. It's not hot and it's not raining. I love that. And my dog hasn't been barking too much. It's been a nice morning so far.
Oh, well, I'm happy you're having good weather. That's good. You're probably having the same weather we're having. I'm sure we're on the same frontal movement.
Yes, it's probably the case. All right, well, let's get to today's interview. I'll start the show off with the same very typical question. Stacy Trock, who are you and where did you come from?
Who am I? It's so deep. I originally come from Silver Spring, Maryland, which is a suburb of DC, Montgomery County. If anyone out there is listening from Montgomery County, hi. And I learned to crochet at a very little age. My mom taught me, and I crocheted through most of my childhood. I crocheted in school. Montgomery County is very liberal. As long as you're doing your schoolwork, you can get away with whatever you want. So I made afghans in class. I entered in the county fair and won lots of little ribbons and things. And it's continued to this day. So now I crochet professionally. I started Fresh Stitches, which is my crochet design company or brand or whatever you'd like to call it, in 2008. And I just haven't stopped.
Okay, that's a nice overview. Let's peel back into that. So, you were crafting early on, and this is something that held your attention all the way through high school, or was this something that you put down every so often?
No, I think I always was just doing it. It's a good question what in the world I was making all those years. Definitely lots of afghans. I still have afghans that I made when I was an early teenager. Gifts. I have no idea where all that stuff went, but no, I just kept going. I took a little bit of a break in college and would crochet if someone needed a gift. But other than that, it's been a pretty consistent time-consuming item in my life. I get that from my mom. She can't sit still without crocheting. So it's sort of just like what you do.
Okay. Well, and I assume that you didn't go right into college to study fiber arts and do all that stuff. So let's talk about your college track because that is slightly different than some of my guests that I've had on before.
It's true. There wasn't a crochet class in college, and I'm not really sure what I would have, done anyway. I was fairly proficient. So I started doing computer science because in high school, if you're good with math, that's what they tell you to do. And I did it for about 3 years, and I just really didn't like it. I wasn't bad at it, but I really didn't want to grow up and write operating systems. So I had also been taking linguistics classes at the time. And so I switched my major to linguistics with a focus on child language acquisition, which basically, it's a lot like psychology. It basically means you're studying how it is that kids learn language and things like that. And I specialized in working with preschool kids, which means you spend most of your day playing with puppets in preschools, which is pretty cool.
And as I understand it, you did the undergrad work, you got your doctorate, and promptly gave it up.
It's true. So I went to get my PhD, and after I finished in about 4 years because I was like, I just don't want to keep doing this. It was the same thing with the, I just can't imagine doing this as my job because it's all very fun when you're an undergrad and a beginning grad student because you're doing the hands-on work with the kids yourself. It's a lot like being a preschool teacher, but the profession is being a professor, which means spending most of your day writing research papers, and the goal is to get undergraduates to do your quote unquote dirty work for you, which was the fun part for me. So I just had no interest in doing it. And so I finished up a year early and I thought, well, what am I going to do with myself here? And most people, if you ask for advice, if you ask older people for advice on their, on their life, what did they wish they had done? They always say, I wish I had done something I enjoyed a little more. I've rarely heard an elderly person say, gosh darn, I wish I had earned $2 more an hour each day. That would have been great. So I thought, what do I really enjoy? And it was stuffed animals and it was crocheting. And I thought, I see some of these people are selling patterns online. I can totally do that. And it would give me the flexibility I was sort of looking for. So I just started.
Well, it's very cool. And Fresh Stitches is a cute brand. And you've I talked about that. You cultivate cute. Cute works for you.
I love cute. I've always loved cute. And you got to go with what you like and what comes naturally. So I'm into sort of the Japanese style of big eyeballed and big bow in the hair sort of things. And so that's what I do.
Well, it's great. Your logo is, I think, my favorite. She's for Farmer Hooligan listeners that haven't seen this before, she's got this big, wonderful owl as part of her Fresh Stitches logo, and it's every single time I see it makes me smile.
Thank you. That's Nelson Owl. He's one of my most popular patterns, so I decided to immortalize him in logo format.
He's amazing. So keep that logo
Oh,
because that's working. It always makes
good.
it always makes me smile. I mean, and I don't think I'm alone in that. So when you got out of college, did you go right into this, or did you take the series of odd jobs that made you glad that you got here?
Well, so I, as soon as it was pretty much like the same week that I decided I was leaving, I decided that I was starting Fresh Stitches because I don't like not having a plan. So I started work on beginning Fresh Stitches, but it's not an income earner straight away. So I taught undergraduates at the university for probably 2 semesters, and I also started working part-time in a yarn store to earn my keep, so to speak. But I was doing that as I was developing Fresh Stitches.
I think you are the third or fourth guest in a row now that has spent some time working in a yarn store. So I'll ask you, how was that?
I loved it. So the story about how I got to work in the yarn store is a little funny. I had only crocheted up until that point. I had tried knitting before, and my stitches were too tight. It just, it didn't work. And I went to the yarn store that was near me, and I asked if I could work there. And they said, we really just have too many people, too many of our customers knit. We can't employ someone who can't knit. And I said, that's no problem. Just show me to knit. So the owner spent about an hour with me, showed me how to knit. I went home. I think I made a noni felted bag. And I came back and I showed them the bag, and they were like, yeah, okay, that's good enough. So I started working at the yarn store, and that was the start of my fiber education because until then I had just picked up some stuff from books. I had been using some yarn that I found at Joann's. I wasn't really well versed in the world of yarn. So working in a yarn store was really great for me, and I learned tons of new stuff. And I continued when we moved to New Haven to work in another yarn store because it was just really a great experience, and I enjoyed. It's good to get out of the house sometimes.
Well, it is. Is that about the same time when you started working for the yarn store that you discovered the online world of places like Ravelry?
Yes, I had not heard of Ravelry before then, and I think this is true of a lot of people who do fiber stuff at home. You don't find out about something until someone tells you about something, and it can be hard to get into a community if you don't already have a community. So once I started working in the yarn store, one of my coworkers told me about Ravelry, and that's when I got into that and found out about it. So yeah, it really was the source of a lot of eye-opening.
Well, you do really well in social media and on Ravelry, and I know you have a pretty committed Ravelry group. I think it's like 2,000
We
folks that are
just
in your.
hit 2,000 members. Very
Yeah.
exciting.
Yeah. And they're active and they're energetic and they're helpful. I think your Ravelry group's kind of cool.
Thank you. Yeah, they're really great. It's just part of it. I mean, part of it, I guess I'd like to say I'm good at doing social media, but part of it's sort of dumb luck. You get people who sign up for your stuff, sort of, you don't get to screen them. They're just these random people who sign up, whether it's your Facebook group, your Ravelry group, whatnot. And the people who are in the Ravelry group are just really great, kind people. And so I feel really fortunate that they have collected themselves together to be in my group.
Well, again, I just think your group is awesome. Let's step back and talk. You said earlier that you don't like to be without a plan. So, Fresh Stitches, you needed a plan. What was the plan?
Well, I don't always have a detailed plan. My plan was to sell PDF patterns, and I wanted to do as much of the work myself, because really I don't have a lot of interest in having employees in my house shipping packages. At the start, I really didn't want any product at all. That has changed. Now I do kits, which is having some physical product in my house. And yeah, I wanted to do as much as I could, keeping sort of the infrastructure of the company as small as possible. So that's always been my goal. My husband's a professor, so he travels a lot. He's also from Australia, so we go back to visit his parents. There's just traveling, and I always wanted that flexibility. And so now, and my customers are very understanding, if I'm gone for a week, then Fresh Stitches is just on vacation, and that's just how it's going to be. I'm not pretending to be some giant, enormous company that has 4 staff people working to keep it running. It's just that I'm gone, and I've always wanted it to be that way.
Well, it doesn't seem like people are getting upset. In fact, it seems like people love you. Your constituents out there, your customers seem happy. You continue to put these beautiful patterns up on your website, and you've stayed in a niche there. You've really not gone in and branched out into things like sweaters. Can you talk a bit? Is this on purpose that you wanted to stay focused into the designing of stuffed animals?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So when I started, I picked the name Fresh Stitches because I wanted the option of going into knitting, or I wanted the option to go into sweaters. And if it was stitches, you know, that's very general. I always knew my aesthetic would be cute things, but I really did think at the start that I would probably be moving on to more, let's say, a cute afghan or a cute hat or something else. Because when I started, most people were like, oh, it's very good you're doing some stuffed animals, but like, how many different animals can you do? Like, give me a break. So I was receptive to that criticism, but I've just kept doing stuffed animals. And my philosophy has been, partially because of the way my mom crochets, she's very uncomfortable reading a pattern. I'll go so far as to say she completely can't read a pattern. And I can't blame her, because there's a lot of diversity in the way crochet patterns are written. They tend to be a lot more confusing than knitting patterns, which for some reason has a more standardized structure. And I can't blame people for being confused. So my philosophy has always been that my patterns are going to be incredibly clearly written, even if it's at the point of being verbose, that there are links that you can click on a video if you need help with this thing. No matter what, I have it on my website, and you can step-by-step get through and not get lost. And as I became more rooted in that sort of philosophy and made more and more videos about the second round and the fourth round and fastening off, I realized it would just be much harder for me to switch to a different area. So I've thought about doing knitted stuffed animals, because I love knitting too, personally. But then the resources that would now be required to start that over again are just too great for right now. And so, yeah, I've been sticking with the stuffed animals, and it's been working.
Well, and I think you're sticking with it just so you can use the word amigurumi, because I think that's an awesome word.
That's a mediocre strategy, since most people I find are sort of intimidated by it. It means like a knitted or crocheted doll in Japanese, and it does scare some people off. So that's not my best marketing strategy. In fact, my publishing company doesn't allow me to use amigurumi in any of the titles of my books, because technically speaking, my things are too big and too stuffed animal-like to actually be amigurumi, which are typically sort of more like tchotchke-type things. So it's controversial.
Well, even still, you know, Fiber Hooligan, say it with me. Amigurumi. It's just a fun word to say. Everybody needs to get past it. Learn a new word. It's fun. So you hunker down. You've been doing this for a couple of years. At this point, how many crochet patterns for stuffed animals do you have on your site?
A lot. It's over 200 that I have that are still in active circulation. Right now, so I still, of course, make new ones, but sometimes I take an old one and sort of like fancy him up a bit, bring him into whatever decade it's called that we're in. So I haven't been producing as many completely brand new ones as I did when I started, but it's well over 200 stuffed animals are out there in the Fresh Stitches verse.
Well, and I kind of like your philosophy. So you must be doing, what, one or two patterns a month, maybe?
Yeah, that's my goal, my average. It varies based on obviously the holidays, the fall. People are really much more stoked and will be happy with one to two more patterns. In the summer, it's more like one because a lot of people take this as their leisure time.
Well, one of the things I like about the way you do this is that there is a lot that goes along with a pattern. There's extensive directions, and if there are techniques that need new videos, you do that, and the photography, and just extensive support on this stuff. So, from my standpoint, one or two a month seems pretty ambitious, really.
It's a lot, yeah. It's always a balance. I mean, on one hand, I'm not going to put out a pattern that doesn't have those things, so it's sort of a must. But you also need to make sure you're putting in enough that it's still new and interesting for the customers. And if you decide you only want to put out 4 a year, that might not be providing enough interaction for everybody. So I feel like one a month minimum is sort of what keeps everyone happy.
Well, and your customers, they continue to come back and back and back and buy your patterns over and over and hound you for what's new. You have some really diehard customers out there.
I do. I'm really fortunate, and I think that's a sign that things are going well, is that they're the same people coming back. I mean, there's always new people, but a lot of the same people coming back, which I think means that it's a good product. So that makes me happy.
Well, I think it is a good product. And the website experience is just a lot of fun, too. There's great pictures up there. There's always, your funny owl and Fresh Stitches logo. And it's just a fun website.
Thank you. The website is, if people ask, it's a WordPress theme. I do all of the, well, I mean, obviously WordPress people do massive amounts of coding. Not like back in the day when I started my website and coded all the CSS and HTML myself. That's no longer how websites are done. But it is an off-the-shelf theme with just the little graphics I make popped in.
The reason I kind of like it is that it does not look like it's an extensive CSS job, but what you've done is just let the graphics be the star of this page.
Yeah, I really try to keep it clean and modern and just let the bright colors and cute things pop out to people.
Again, you're always about the cute, aren't you?
That's true. That's what it's about.
So you mentioned earlier about making a living and doing this and, the economics of this thing. This is an ongoing conversation that I've had with many of my guests. And, as a small entrepreneur, I just like to talk to you about your thoughts about how to make it, expectations, those kinds of things in the business world.
Sure. Well, I think I have lots of thoughts. Well, one thing that I think is important for everyone to know is whenever you start any kind of business, you're probably not going to be earning a lot of money the first year, or maybe even the first couple of years. People, unless you have some venture capitalist budget, you're not advertising, you don't have a large fan base yet, and things do just get easier and easier as you go on and you have more exposure already. So starting out's just hard. I worked part-time for, I'd say, the first 3 years, and it's only been the last 2 years that Fresh Stitches was really a solid full-time thing to be doing. The other thing that I encourage people to do when you're starting out is to think about how you want to be making your money and how it's going to be efficient making your money. So let's pretend you knit shawls and you sell a shawl for X amount. Now, what happens when you get super, super busy? Are you going to be able to make 20 of those? Are you going to be able to make 100 of them? Do you have a plan for outsourcing it? Were you selling the shawls pricey enough that you could afford outsourcing it? And those scaling issues, I think, are something a lot of people don't think about, because what might be fun and profitable for you to do for 2 hours in your downtime after your full-time job might not become enough if that becomes your full-time job and your normal salary is gone. So for me, PDF patterns have really been a good way to do that, because you can continue to sell PDF patterns. I'm still selling Nelson the Owl, for example, from 2000 that I made in 2008. And thinking about what keeps it fresh and new. So in about 2011, I added kits, which are the yarn, the eyes, the pattern, all bundled together. And it was something that my customers really wanted. and it was something that I could do, and it's been a huge boon to my business and has brought in even more customers. So those are just some random thoughts to throw out there.
No, I think those are good thoughts. I've had many guests on the show say, look, it's, you need to be thinking about a comfortable living, but not, getting super rich in the fiber arts world. I'd agree with that.
Sure.
I like to, make sure people understand that. More importantly, it's like, just as you said, it's a lot like a small business. Doesn't matter what it is. If you don't have income to cover that for the first 2 years, you might be in trouble.
Yeah, and I think also a diversity of things has really helped me succeed. I don't know what everyone else's business models are like, but let's say I spend 4 hours a day writing a pattern a month or two patterns a month. I can't necessarily spend twice as much time. If I publish four patterns a month, I don't really know if I'm selling four times as many patterns because I have a customer base who are only going to buy a certain amount, and cranking it up to 10 patterns a month isn't going to make me 10 times as much money. So I have found a lot of help from diversifying. I do teaching, I write books, I self-publish patterns, I sell kits, I have a kit club, and that diversity works really well and also is continually increasing your customer base. When I go and teach a class, new people meet me, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is about making sure that you have a new story to tell at least once a month. It's mm-hmm. about being able to put your name back out there in a different way, so I absolutely agree with these things. There are soft and intangible benefits to these things besides the return on the investment of doing the one pattern.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's step out of this arena for a little bit and move over into your books. Why don't we talk about your books for a little bit?
Sure. I have three books. My first book I wrote in 2010, which was still when I was, so I started writing it in 2009 when I was just a little baby designer. It's called Cuddly Crochet. And it's 20 patterns, 10 are stuffed animals, and 10 are partnered with each stuffed animal as a baby item that you could give it a shower. So let's say there's a koala bear and a koala blanket that would be a nice little duo. And there's penguins, a penguin and a penguin hat that go together. And that makes the 20 patterns in the book. And that's a really sweet sort of baby shower. Every new grandparent wants to have this book sort of thing. My second book came out, later. Maybe it's 2011. I don't know, 2012. It's called Crocheted Softies, and that's 18 just stuffed animal patterns. So that book is more of what you would expect from having seen my website, different stuffed animals from all around the world, using lots of different shapes and techniques to make the stuffed animals. And in that book, I focus on using sustainable and eco-friendly yarns. Sometimes they come from the place that the animal is from, which is super cute. So the orangutan is made with recycled banana silk, which, is from the same continent. I don't know. I thought that was sort of cute. And the panda is made from bamboo. The alpaca is made from alpaca. I worked really hard on that part. Right, that was the second book. And then my third book just came out this year, and it's called Modern Baby Crochet. And it has, I think, 21 patterns in it. And this is a typical things you would want for your nursery sort of book. So really colorful afghans, floor mats that you'd play on, mobiles, that sort of thing. And that one, I got to use lots of rainbow colors, so I really love that one. And it's not your boring pastels. They're super modern, super fun patterns.
Well, very cool. So how do you enjoy the publishing part of and the writing part of publishing?
It's such a good question. I enjoy the having a published book part of publishing. I'm sort of a control freak in normal life, so that's why I do everything myself. So when I publish a pattern, I took all the photos, I edited all the photos, I wrote all the text. I mean, everything's exactly the way I like it. When you work with a publisher, you give up a little bit of that control, which for someone like me is a little bit difficult. So there's a little bit of tension around how a specific thing may or may not be phrased, which makes the process little stressful, but in the end, all of my books, I think, are very beautiful, and they came out well, and I know they know what they're doing, but I enjoy it being done more than the process.
That's very fair. That's very fair. And we'll get back to that a little bit, because you like to do a lot of things for yourself, and that's kind of a whole philosophy we're going to talk about a little later on. But cool books. I took a look at them online, and for our customers that want to find these books, are there links to your books on freshstitches.com?
Yeah, under books. Yep, I have a list of them. They're available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, those sorts of places.
Very cool. All right, well, the other part of your diversity, as you talked about earlier, was your move into teaching. Now, you had done some teaching before, and eventually you started teaching with us at Stitches. And will you refresh my memory about how that happened, how you got working with us?
Well, sure. So years ago, like let's say it was like 2009, I had been teaching at my local yarn store. And this was back when Stitches was at Baltimore. And someone said, oh, you teach, you can apply to teach. They don't have any stuffed animals. And I sent in this awful application. It was for only like this one class. I'm pretty sure I said it could be 3 or 6 hours. I don't mind. And I found it later. It's a complete mess. So I sent that in and that didn't fly. And nothing much happened until later. I was at TNNA, which is the National Needle Work Arts Association. It's our trade show that we all go to, and us designers get together and chat. And I ran into Gwen Portner, who was...
Gwen,
right, who was... She watched my Craftsy course as a way to prepare for her Craftsy course to see what they were like. And she said, you know, you are a really good teacher. I'm going to talk to Benjamin about you. And then that's how it transpired.
Well, and I'm glad it did. You bring so much enthusiasm and just sort of fun into the whole Stitches group. Mavis, Christy, and the gang love working with you. Well, you know, you've got to be one of our younger teachers. Obviously, you probably
I'm pretty
that.
Sure I'm the youngest teacher there.
Yes. Other than the time that I had CC Creech, who was 9 years old at the time, teaching for us, right now you are the youngest teacher. But you bring a lot of enthusiasm. Of course, you've joined the Rat Pack. You always walk around with them.
The ne'er-do-wells.
You know, folks, they're not ne'er-do-wells. They're awesome. They are super supportive of each other. They help each other. They give each other positive feedback. They help each other with little things that, you know, logistical issues that they may be dealing with or teaching methodology. They're awesome.
It's true, because there's a whole different, like, the business of teaching is actually a whole different thing than doing the teaching. You have to pick a course title that seems attractive to people who might want to sign up for the course, for example. And so for things like that, the group's really been invaluable for me.
Well, and you do really well at the shows. Now, I know, you know, we've struggled in the past making sure that we get your classes filled all the time. That's just the nature of crochet classes at our shows. Having said that, I've seen your reviews. They are phenomenal. And I would say that a lot of the people in your classes are knitters mm-hmm. that look at your stuff and say, yeah, I want to pick up the hook and learn to do that.
It's true. I get a lot of knitters. And, you know, I feel like I've taught lots of different kinds of things, and my philosophy with teaching is just working with the person where they are and getting them to where the topic of the class says that will go. So one of my favorite classes to teach is Intro to Double Point Needles. They're mostly people who are terrified of double point needles because they've dropped all the stitches off before, or someone has yelled at them and thrown one at them. Who knows? You can come with all kinds of trauma. And at the end, I tell them, you cannot scare me. At the end, you are going to be using the double point needles. And I have never had someone fail. Everyone is as happy as a clam when they walk out of there. And that just makes me feel really good, because it's about finding where the person is and taking them where they want to go.
Well, it works for you. And I'm sure that you had some teaching courses and a lot of teaching training when you were in school that translates very well into this arena.
Yeah, it's really the same thing. I mean, if I know how to do it, I pretty much feel like I can teach it, just because of the way I think about things. I'm always thinking about, well, how would you do this differently? How Would you explain this to someone if you didn't know how to do this part already? And I think that ties in with what we were talking about earlier about my patterns. I think it's really important to explain how to do something to someone who might not have done it yet. And that's just important to me to do.
Well, you also talked to me about the no judgment zone, that people might do things slightly differently that is standard. And that also applies to you and how you work on making sure people don't feel judged.
Exactly. I mean, when I started crocheting, I learned, so my mom makes this ripple afghan. It's the only thing she makes. It zigzags back and forth. And you crochet through the back loop on that particular afghan to get these little ridged things, whatever. And so I just thought that's how you crocheted. I had never seen anything differently. And I had been crocheting enough that by the time I picked up a book, I wasn't really looking that carefully about where they were putting the hook. So that's just how I crochet. And I've discovered a lot of benefits over the years, and I, although do the normal way and my way, I prefer my way. And I was sort of giggled at online when I started because it's a different look, it's a different style, and I just feel like you should do whatever looks the way you want it to look in the end. And I think there's a lot of dogma about how you should be stitching, how you should do this. And it's really just not fair. Like, there's no council of knitting that tells you how to do these things. So when I teach beginning knitting, I don't even talk about what hand you should be holding the yarn in, because quite frankly, it doesn't matter if you like holding it with your left hand, if you like holding it with your right hand, both of those are fine. Many people knit that way. You're going to find a buddy somewhere who's like you, and it just doesn't matter, and it's not worth stressing out someone who's been knitting for all of 5 minutes about.
Well, these are good things to say. So you have worked with us, and I know before you worked with us, you were involved with Craftsy. I've had many teachers on the show that have been Craftsy teachers. I think out of the last five shows, four of the guests have been Craftsy teachers. And I think the reason is that Craftsy's got good taste, and so do I. So we can pat each other on the back. So let's talk about your Craftsy work. There's a great picture of you with thumbs up there. It looks like you had a good time while you were there.
I love my Craftsy filming experience. Actually, I'm flying out to film another class next week. So that means it was great because I'm doing it again. It's just, I mean, they're really professionals about how to do the online learning experience. They have, you know, these little cameras, and they will tell you like, oh, a person might be asking this kind of question, or we have to show it up close because that's the kind of detail someone taking a class online is looking for. Let's reshoot that bit. And they just know how to film it so that the customer, the student, gets the best experience. And that makes it really enjoyable to do because you know when you leave, you have this really great class that you can recommend to other people, which is a good feeling.
It is a good feeling. Can you talk about your next Craftsy class, or is that top secret?
That's secret. It's really secret. But I can talk about my existing ones.
Let's talk about your existing ones then.
Sure. Okay. I have two existing ones. And for me, they really fill the niches that I just didn't have the capability to do them on my own. One course is a beginning amigurumi course, which is really great. It's meant for people who, if you haven't crocheted before, that's totally fine. If you have crocheted but just haven't done stuffed animals, that's fine. If you love stuffed animals, it's still really cheap to get all the four patterns. So it's for everybody. And that will take you through learning to single crochet all the way through making four different woodland animals that have increasingly difficult shaping and color work. My second course is a how to design your own monster, and all the examples are monsters just for cohesion of theme, but it's really how to design your own animal course, where we learn various skills, techniques, and then we actually just draw and talk about how you would get a pattern to line up with those various kinds of shapes that you are forming. And that's a class I've been wanting to teach forever. It's actually what I approached my publisher with the very first time I sent in a book proposal, and they just told me people aren't interested in that sort of thing. They want some projects, and, you know, know. So I was just really excited to get to teach that class because people love it and people go on to write their own patterns and sell them online, which is just the greatest feeling knowing that I've given people a way to do that.
Well, very cool. And the response to your classes so far have been pretty good?
It has been. They're very active. I get new comments all the time, always new people joining. And the best thing is sometimes I'll just be looking around on Instagram or something and I'll just see one of them pop up. And it's not someone who's a fan of mine or someone who I've ever met before. They just happened upon this Craftsy class and took this and made a little animal, and then I find it eventually. And that's a really good feeling.
Well, it's very cool. And congratulations on your Craftsy classes. Again, every time I see any picture of you, you're smiling, but there's a great picture of you for your promo for your Craftsy class with the thumbs up and everything. That always, again, so much of your stuff makes me smile. You're just so darn cute.
Well, I'm a happy person.
You're a happy person.
Important.
Well, and yes. And now you've expanded. I understand that you'll be teaching at Vogue Live.
It's true. I'm giving it a go. It's close to me in Chicago, so they are interested in having some more diversity in their crochet classes. So we're giving it a roll. We'll find out how it goes. As we've talked about before, getting crocheters, and I don't know why, to sign up for classes has been a difficult situation across many, many different venues. And so I do really encourage people, if you want to take a class, to come take it, because as you obviously know, and I'm sure your listeners do know, but if the numbers aren't good enough, it doesn't encourage the person to be signed on for the next year, because no one can offer classes that aren't filling year after year. So there might not be a next year if people don't sign up for them. So fingers crossed.
Despite that, we at XRX think you're wonderful, and so we're going to figure out a way to always have you with us because we just love having you around.
Thank you.
And we're going to make people catch on to what you do because it's just cool. It's just cool. So, you know, we just have to all work harder at that, and there's nothing wrong with that. If it was easy, everybody would do it, right?
That's true. But, I mean, crocheting is, I think it's one of those things where it's almost been built into a feud, almost like, are you a knitter, are you a crocheter, are you this, you know? And I just think that it's time for that wall to be broken down. It's some yarn, it's a little implement, and if you want to make a cute kind of thing, you can use some needles, you can use a hook, and I think we should all just feel more comfortable embracing our bicraftual selves.
You will not get any argument from me. I had a lot of people on the show in last week, or 2 weeks ago, I had Edie Ekman on the show, who says that she is a knit crochet diplomat. She does not see the point. The best fiber artists that I know, whether it's a Kristen Omdahl, a Myra Wood, a Marley Bird, Drew Imborski, they all know how to knit and crochet. They may do one more than the other because that's the business of what they are known for. But most proficient fiber artists usually can do that, and maybe even a few other things as well, simply because they're creative and they want options.
It's true, and I think it's a bit of a cultural thing as well. Like, if you pick up a magazine in Germany for handicrafts, it will very typically be 33% knitting, 33% crochet, some embroidery, maybe there's tatting in there, and then how to, you know, decorate your sofa. It's very mixed about, it's just like crafting, and this is some crafting that you can do. And so I'm not really sure how the tension got started here in the U.S., but I think we're all just working on moving on.
I really think it was market-driven, Stacy. The very first magazine that we put out when I was in probably junior high or high school was not Knitter's Magazine or Weaver's Magazine. It was called the Prairie Wool Companion, which I know you'll get the reference there. And we put it out as a yarn store. And so in it, we had some weaving and some crochet and some knitting and some bobbin lace and some tatting, maybe even hardanger, all the stuff that we taught in the stores. And we brought it to market, and I think literally dozens of people signed up to subscribe for it. It was a well-done magazine. It was very diverse. We brought it to market at TNNA, And really, we were given the feedback, you need to hyper focus, you know,
Yeah.
or is this knitting? I get knitting, blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know whether the consumers made that decision going up or the industry made that decision pushing down, but it was a wonderful magazine. And I keep wondering if we ever dusted off the idea, if it would be worth doing, because it was awesome.
Yeah. No, we are into hyper-focused niches. It's true. That's sort of our country shtick.
It is. It is. Well, but I like the idea of diversity. And so let's talk a little bit more about your diversity. This whole thing that you do, the self-employment, the working with handicrafts, it extends beyond just the fiber arts world. It's sort of a lifestyle decision for you that you practice in many ways throughout your life.
It's true. I would call myself maybe an urban homesteader because I don't actually have chickens because there's like zoning things and whatnot. But I love doing everything for myself. I mean, I even do my taxes myself. It just like freaks me out to let someone else do them. I make all of our yogurt that we eat. I make all of our bread, which includes pizza dough and pita and various bread kinds of things. I just love doing everything myself. And I don't know why. It could be because I was crafting at a young age. But for me, it's really about making the thing. Like last night, I just made a whole new set of unpaper towels because I don't use paper towels. I use, washable dish rags. Made a new set. They have little animals on them. They're very cute. So my crafting is really about making a product that's functional. I very rarely do things that are just for art. And I know you mentioned Myra. So she, for me, is like the ultimate artist. She does things because they're beautiful and that's great. And I love people like that. But I am always doing something because I can like use it to like wash the table with. It's usually my goal.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that, and I know that this is a lifestyle thing. You know, the whole the canning, the baking. I mean, you do a lot of this stuff, and you also try to have some balance. You are not an obsessed workaholic like I am.
I'm not. Yeah, I don't know how you roll, man.
I, you know, and you've gotten the emails from me that were timestamped 1:20 in the morning, and I never, and folks, if I send you an email at 1:20 in the morning, I really don't expect an email back, and especially that's true for you,
Yeah,
Stacey.
you're
You're
not
not,
getting
I'm
one.
not going
No,
to, you're not
5 o'clock.
going
It's over. So, I mean, the thing that I really. Well, I'll go back a little, back to the business perspective. So I've met a number of designers who tell me at the end of the day their paychecks aren't very good because by the time you've hired out the photographer, you've hired out the sample maker, you've hired out a pattern formatter, you've hired your accountant, all those things, there's not much left, which is totally true, and I can see that. And my philosophy has always just been to do it myself and to make doing those things enjoyable. Because when you only do an hour of photography a week, it's an enjoyable learning experience as compared to if you're doing something 40 hours a week, then it sort of becomes drudgery. So I take the same approach with my life. I mean, and a lot of people tell me it's their vision to, work super hard, earn a lot of money, and get a ton of time off. And I'm always like, but what do I do with my time off? So I just expand out the work process to, so I make our bread. And I don't go buy an artisan loaf from the store. I save that, $6 and spend 50 cents to make the little artisan loaf myself. And I find it really enjoyable because I'm not baking 500 loaves a week like a baker does. And so, yeah, I do all of these things enough so that they're really enjoyable. And I use them to fill out the rest of my life, which means that for Fresh Stitches stuff, I am off of work at 5 or 6. I don't work on weekends except for maybe a blog post or something that's relatively small. And it keeps me feeling balanced and happy. And I think that's good.
Well, I think it's great. I'm going to have to like have you give me lessons on this because balanced and happy and not I what I keep hearing of this thing people call a life, and I think that I should try one day. No, you're I look at your whole website is wonderful because there's these great pictures of you. There's pictures of, you know, the canned goods that you've done, but there's also pictures of you traveling. I think there's a picture of you and I think think it's your husband in Florence, I believe.
Yeah, with a gnome.
With a gnome,
Yep,
yes.
that's us taking a photo. It's our friend taking a photo of us, of me taking a photo of a gnome. We do travel a lot, and that's something we find really enjoyable. I mean, a lot of times I'm traveling for work or he's traveling for work, and so if it works, one of us might tag along. And that's just a freedom that you don't get with a normal office job. So, yeah, that's something we're really excited about.
That's very cool. And again, you look like you've gotten it together much more than I have. Now, your husband is a professor.
He is, yes, at the University of Minnesota. Go Gophers!
Go Gophers.
I'm very excited that Maryland, which is where I went, the Terps, have just joined the Big Ten, which is the same conference that the Gophers are in. So I will get to see my Terps play occasionally. I'm very stoked. This is a big deal. Huge deal. I'm a big sports fan.
But who will you be rooting for?
If it's the two of them, it has to be Maryland. But the rest of the time, I'm happy to give my devotion to Minnesota.
Okay, all right. It's just
Just to
it's you know
clarify.
folk it's important. These are things that we talk about out here in the Midwest, folks. So I just needed to clarify that. Okay.
It's true.
So when people are trying to find out about what's new, what new classes, what new patterns, is the easiest thing for them to go up to your website or to sign
Yes.
up for your newsletter?
Well, so if they go to my website, there's a little email box that you can type your email in, and that emails you the blog posts. So that's the easiest way to make sure you get everything. A lot of people like following me on Twitter or join the Ravelry group. I'm on lots of different social media, but the blog and getting the emails is the best way to make sure you're finding out about everything
Yes,
and
and you
getting
should do
cool
that,
stuff.
folks. And get cool stuff, good tips. You find out what's new, and you'll get every so often just a huge dose of cute in your inbox, which I know is the point. So, all right, well, we're coming down close to the end of our interview. Second to last question: are there any shout-outs that you'd like to give on today's show?
Yeah, I think the biggest shout out, because my husband's cool, but he doesn't really do very much in terms of my business, is to my Ravelry group, because we talked about them earlier, so it seems a little redundant, but they're just a really great bunch of people. And I don't think Fresh Stitches would be where it is today if they weren't all there being such great fans, telling someone, oh, hey, why don't you try that pattern? Or if so, like we said, I travel, I'm not at my computer 24 hours a day. If someone comes to the group with a question, so often someone will jump in and answer it, and it's just the nicest group. So they're really what makes this all possible. So thank you, Ravelry group.
Well, kudos to the Ravelry group, and it's nice for you to remember them. It's always great when you remember your customers and the people that are working with you, because they've got to be your diehard lot that give you the feedback that you need to be better.
They are. They're my super fans. They're who I run things by if I'm thinking, oh, should we do this or that? So one thing that came out of my Ravelry group's request that's coming up is we're doing a tour de loop, which you might have heard of the Tour de France, where people cycle around France. And then there was the Tour de Fleece, where spinners spin wool to make yarn during the Tour de France. And they were really wanting something that we could do, get behind during the summer, which can be sort of a down season. So we're having the Tour de Loop, which is open to knitters, crocheters, embroidery people, anyone who makes a loop, tatting, whatever have you. We're encouraging you to do that verb for 1 hour a day from July 5th to 27th while the cyclists are cycling. So you can take a rest day off when the cyclists are resting. And I think people, it's really fun. You'll post what you're doing. There's no like goal. It's just to do the craft for an hour a day, because I think a lot of people get caught up in, I need to make a sweater, I need to do this thing. But really, what you do is just practicing just makes you so much better. And if you just do it with the point of view of getting in some time, I think people will be really pleased with the results.
Very cool. That's kind of neat.
It'll be fun.
All right. So this has been a great show so far. Final question I'd like to ask you: do you have any words of advice, some final parting words of advice for the Fiber Hooligan listeners today?
Yeah, here's my wisdom. I want you to know that you can do it. Whether it's crocheting, whether it's knitting, you know, when you're a kid, and like if you look at a 4-year-old who's learning to write, none of us have ever looked at a kid and been like, oh, geez, that's a little sloppy. Maybe you're not cut out to be, you know, a literate person. Just give it up. Because that would be awful. But so many people do that to themselves. They learn to crochet for, you know, a whole half hour, and they look at it and they go, oh, it looks a little cruddy. Maybe I'm just not good at this. And of course it looks cruddy. You just started a half hour ago. So I want people to be as kind to themselves as they would be to a 4-year-old learning to write. It's a craft that takes time. And so if you just do it, practice it semi-often, semi-regularly, you'll be really surprised with how well you can do. So you can do it.
Well, see, that's great advice. And again, it's the kind of advice that I see in the best teachers and designers. That advice that says, give yourself a break. You're not going to be good at anything the first time you can do something. So great, great final message today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
It was wonderful to have you on the show. You have been so charming and again, just cute. You now have the ranking for cutest guest that I've had on so far. I hope we can get you to come back and join us again, and maybe next time tell us all about your top secret craftsy class.
Yes, I would love to come back on. So give me a couple months.
That'd be great. So thank you for your time today. It's been a great show, and I guess I will probably see you at Stitches East in October.
It's true. I'll see you there.
All right. Well, you have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. That was Stacy Trock. You can keep up with what Stacy is doing at freshstitches.com, and that's one you're going to want to bookmark. Okay, you know what time it is.
Now it's time for State of the Hooligan with Tammy Burke.
I'd like to welcome back host of State of the Hooligan, moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Rivalry Group, and administrator of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page to tell us all what's new and cool in the fiber arts world, our roving virtual reporter, my friend and fellow Fiber Hooligan, Tammy Burke. Tammy joins us again today from Boise, Idaho. Good morning, Tammy, and welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. It's great to hear from you again. How are you doing?
We're all right.
Oh yeah?
Yes, how about you?
Well, things are pretty good. I'm getting the hang of this new format and kind of loving it. It's a little more work with all the editing, but I'm loving it. So yeah, I found myself for as compulsive as I am, I should never have gone down this road because now I have the ability to like tweak and tweak and tweak these shows, and I find myself easily doubling the amount of time that I spend on the shows. But I guess that's okay because the goal here is to make a good show that everybody likes, and so it's a good thing, right?
That's awesome. You have the right to professionally alter my voice so I sound sexy like Mae West or something.
I will work on that. That's the next thing. That's the next thing we're
Uh-oh.
working on. Yep, that's the next thing we're doing. So how was your week? Did you get a lot of knitting done this last week?
I did. It's summertime. I know that a lot of people kind of put off doing that, but I'm one of those that I tend to put off until summer. The really lightweight projects to carry around, gloves and socks and hats are wonderful things. I enjoy knitting, and the more challenging, the better in the summertime. So I'm distracted from, you know, maybe the war days that are a little bit too warm, keeping me awake so I'm not sleeping all afternoon like a siesta or something. So Stacy
You
was
know,
wonderful.
isn't she? See, she's just so darn cute, isn't she? I mean, she
I'm
just
really
is like
looking forward to learning more about her.
she's just wonderful. You know, her online name is Fresh Stitches, and she is absolutely fresh. She's infectious. She's I don't know. Her enthusiasm and just her, I don't know, everything about her. Just I am just enamored with her.
Yes, I think that's an opportunity. I think that's a personality that we're all looking forward to spending more time with at Stitches East.
Yeah, right. Because it turned out that she couldn't be with us with Stitches Midwest, but you know she's going to be back with us, I think, at Stitches East. I should probably confirm that. No, I'm pretty sure that's the case. You never know. I get all these things mixed up, Tammy, so don't hold me to anything. But yeah, she's absolutely wonderful. And again, you know, she's so young and that charisma. You know, I feel sometimes like I'm getting old and getting curmudgeon-y, and I love spending time with young people like Stacy, or even for last week's episode, like Nicole. These young people that just have so much enthusiasm about everything.
That just makes them young pliable, so that we can make great fiber hooligans out of them.
You know, I think they were fiber hooligans before they met me, which I really like. I think that's why I was kind of attracted to them.
There you go.
There we go. No, I think especially, you know, Stacy is got the makings of a fiber hooligan. So anyway, let's get off that. I always look forward to your report. So what have you got for us this week?
Well, today with the State of the Hooligan segment, we wanted to share Kyle Williams.
Oh, that's great. I am so glad you picked that, Tammy, because this is a good story. Kyle's a friend and a friend of the XRX organization. So, yes, I'm so glad you picked this, Tammy. So please tell our Fiber Hooligan listeners kind of what's going on right now, because this is a great thing you guys can get involved in.
Yay. Okay, Kyle William is a screen name, or it might just be the username for Kyle Konecki. The first time I saw one of his designs, it was for a pullover hoodie raglan sweater that was a basket weave stitch in one of the 2012 Knitters Magazine issues called the Corydon sweater. And that was a great project to look at. He's really put a lot of thought into it. But the next time I saw him, I fell in love with a vest that appeared in the unofficial Harry Potter Knits magazine. And I think his vest is the reason why I went and bought that. It's a simple vest on the front, nice looking, but on the back is a complete set of wings. It's called the Order of the Phoenix winged vest. Well, obviously. And in the meantime, Kyle's a very busy guy. He's just a designing busy bee like so many that we know, and writing a great blog like so many others that we know. And then he began to think of the power of the fiber community like so many others that we know. But so few that we know have actually been able to do something with all three. Last year, he curated a book of hats, including 15 hats from designers like Franklin Habit and Annie Quilbaquito, called Good Deeds, and intends this as volume one. So hopefully there's another one coming soon that we can look forward to. In the meantime, Kyle's taking himself out of the designing studio and running. He will be participating in the San Francisco AIDS Walk coming up on July 20th. And in order to support Kyle's efforts to raise money for his organization, many wonderful businesses and companies have donated prizes to help him achieve his goal of $10,000. They include a Shack spinning wheel. Our friends at Pearlescence Yarns have offered a prize package of goodies, which includes a pound of merino and credit toward a spinning class through SpinU. There's a 21 skein rainbow of wool coming from Cascades Yarns. There are some wonderful kits from Collage, books and kits and patterns from all different various designers in that area. There's a 3-year subscription to Knitters Magazine, one of our favorite magazines. There's a custom-made shark hat coming from Pam Haskey, and my absolute favorite item is a hand-knit owl from our friend and probably our youngest fiber hooligan, Miss Cece Creech. Every $25 donation is an entry to win one of these prizes, and that can be done at his website under the tab for the walk, which is kylewilliam.com, and then the tab for the AIDS walk is where you find that. I'll have the link in the Ravelry group page. In the meantime, if there was a specially designated formal State of the Hooligan kudos that we could award that meant something as formal as being knighted, we here at the State of the Hooligans Department of the Fiber Hooligans would offer to tap each shoulder of Mr. Kyle and show our esteem for his valiant effort. People like you that make the rest of us yarny fiber folk look really good.
Well done, and I think you do have the power to enable a knighthood under the shield of the hooligan. You know, this is a great story. I've met Kyle before. Of course, he's designed for us. This was something that I found out about kind of last minute. He's in touch with our editor, Rick Mondragon, because Rick has merchandised his stuff before in Knitters Magazine. He's done great work for us in the past. He's come to Stitches West many times. He's just a good guy. And I love the fact that he has been able to figure out a way to combine a little activism with some, you know, reaching out to the fiber arts community. And it's so wonderful to see so many fiber arts businesses put prizes into the pool so that to help him raise some money for this walk.
There's just some really delicious items in there, and $25 opportunity, you know, to get in on some of that stuff, I think is a wonderful, amazing thing. I know he's going to make his goal of $10,000. You can see, you know, the thermometer, he's got that gauge to show us how, and it's been making great progress. So I know that he's going to make that goal, and he's going to do such a wonderful thing at this Fiber Arts Walk. Excuse me. He's going to make it a Fiber Arts Walk.
Right.
So, you know, show that community, you know, that donation is really going to help those that he's hoping to help. So,
Again, this is a great segment. I'm so glad you chose this. Tammy, you know, Kyle, good guy, fiber artist, designer, activist, figured out a way to put that all together. You know, Kyle, you know, if you're listening, I want to tell you, you're the kind of guy we need more of out in the world.
Yes.
You know, you should know that we think the world of what you're doing, and we hope that when this is all done, that you'll come on the show and allow us to interview so we can talk a little bit more about this and make sure that our listeners get to hear about the causes that are near and dear to your heart.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll reach out to him. For right now, what we'll do is we'll try to make sure that we remind everybody that Kyle's doing this and to get up to his website and donate some money. He needs some money, folks.
We'll have Blake in our Ravelry group, so it'll be easy to find.
Yeah, great segment. I can't congratulate you enough for your choice of subject matter today, and thanks for looking that up. You know, again, thank you for another great segment, Tammy, and we'll look forward to hearing from you next week.
Yay! We'll see you next week. Happy Monday, Benjamin.
Happy Monday. That was Tammy Burke, host of State of the Hooligan, admin of our Fiber Hooligans Facebook page, and moderator of our Fiber Hooligans Ravelry group. For those of you who may have missed anything in this podcast, I invite you to join us in one of our groups. Tammy does such a great job of making sure we answer questions and provide links and follow-up to anything you may have heard on the show. I do have a quick addendum that Tammy wasn't able to talk about during her segment. A few weeks ago, we had Ann Burke on the show, and one of the things that Ann gave away was one of her Craftsy.com classes. Using a random number generator, Tammy picked one of the people that posted in our Ravelry group, and the 28th comment was selected. That comment was made by Tammy74, who wrote, "I've done one Intarsia project, but would love to be able to do a class on it to learn it properly." Well, good news, Tammy74. You've won Anne's Craftsy class. Please get a hold of Tammy or me, and we'll get your contact information over to Anne so you can redeem that Craftsy class and learn all you need to learn about Intarsia. And congratulations. Next week, my guest will be the very talented and stylish Kristen Omdahl. Founder of StyledByKristen.com and design company Kristen, Kristen Omdahl frequently contributes to the website that bears her name. In addition to showcasing her designs, Kristen serves up terrific articles about knitting, crochet, yarn, and even a few sneak peeks at what's new. Kristen Omdahl designs knit and crochet garments and patterns under her label Kristen, and is the author of Knitting Outside the Swatch, The Finer Edge, Seamless Crochet, A Knitting Rhapsody, Crochet So Fine, and Wrapped in Crochet, all from Interweave Press. Kristen was the crochet expert for 8 seasons on Knitting Daily TV on public television, and she conducts seminars around the country on crochet and in her DVD workshops. Crochet Basics and Beyond with Kristen Omdahl from Interweave. Innovative Crochet Motifs, also from Interweave. Kristen's work has appeared in Interweave Crochet, Interweave Knits, Knit Scene, Vogue Knitting, plus books including Blueprint Crochet Sweaters, Unexpected Afghans, Crochet Gifts, and Crochet Me, all from Interweave Press. Passionate about design, Kristen seeks inspiration in textures and geometric shapes found in nature. Her quirky fondness of mathematics and attraction to natural fibers make knitting and crochet heaven on earth for this talented designer. She's got a lot of projects going on right now. She also has some very big news that we will be lucky enough to hear directly from her. I hope you'll tune in next week for what I know will be a remarkable show. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback at benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. And that includes suggestions for guests or cool things you'd like Tammy to talk about in her segment. If you want to email Tammy directly, you can do so at tammy@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. If you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, I may even read your email on the podcast. If you're following us on iTunes, we have moved. You can find us now at fiberhooligan.com/iTunes. And since we're at a new channel up there on iTunes, I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a comment if you like the show. I'd like to thank Prime Publishing and AllFreeCrochet.com for their sponsorship of Fiber Hooligan. I'd also like to thank my editor, Christine Weir, as well as Simone, Caitlin, Chris, Keith, Stuart, and the rest of the gang at Prime Publishing for all their help. I'd like to thank my guest, Stacey Trock, for being so gracious with her time and being so much fun on today's show. I'd like to thank Tammy Burke for everything she does on and off the show. I'd like to thank Leisure Arts for sponsoring today's show. And of course, I'd like to thank all of you for listening. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending this time with us. We'll see you next week for another edition of Fiber Hooligan.